This week in Parshas Truma, we begin a very lengthy discussion which continues over many parashios about the building of the tabernacle, the building of the Mishkan. The Torah tells us in source number one that Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, "Speak to the children of Israel and let them take for me a portion from every man whose heart motivates him, shall you take my portion." And the Torah describes in detail what were these gifts that were given. The gold, the silver, the copper, the turquoise, etc. And then the Torah, after describing all the things that were given, says in verse 8, "They shall make for me a sanctuary so that I may dwell among them. Vasuli mikdash v'shachanti b'tocha." And the question which the commentators ask, and it's a question I'd like to deal with today, perhaps one of the most famous questions regarding this week's parsha, is Vasuli mikdash, you shall make for me a sanctuary and I shall dwell among them. Should it not say, you shall make for me a sanctuary and I will dwell among it, singular? What is the concept of them? As well as the question of, we know that everything in the Torah is nitzrius, it's eternal. But the building of the tabernacle, the building of the temple, was for a very specific time. How do we take this law? And this law is a law, and the details of which fill Parshios Truma, Tetzave, Kitivsa, Vayakel, Pekude, five Parshios. How do we take all of these details and make them pertinent and relevant to our lives? And this is the question that many of the commentators struggle with, and this is the question I'd like to try to deal with the Mirtza Hashem on two distinct levels. How can we take this mitzvah and make it as relevant as possible? In simpler terms, how can we create in our own lives a mini mikdash, a mini tabernacle for God to reside in us? The first of the two approaches is found in the Siva Shalom, where he says in source number 3, Vasuli mikdash lashon rabim shikai al echad ve'echad habonim ba'is Yehudi. This is a reference to each and every one of us who builds a Jewish home. Now, when we speak about building a Jewish home, so yes, it is about, in the best circumstances, father, mother, with children. But a Jewish home can also be an individual living by themselves, two individuals without children. A Jewish home is at any place where a person resides. Vasuli mikdash lashon kedusha. Shiasu beitam lumakom kodesh. That we should create in our homes a place of kedusha, of holiness. Shekol halichota bekedusha. That everything we do should be done with kedusha, with holiness. Makom, a place, haraui lashros hashchina. A place that's worthy to have the divine presence rest on us. Bifchinas Beit Migdash Shema'at. To a certain extent, we are creating a mini Beit HaMigdash in our own homes. And therefore, the directives of what is found in these places, directives that's found in the Mishkan, is really a model for what we need to find within our own homes. And the Kedusha and the holiness that's found and the care that is taken to build the temple is a model in the care that we need to build our own homes. And this explains the famous verse in source number 5 where David HaMelech says, "Shifti b'veit Hashem kol yemei chayat." I want to live, I want to dwell in God's house all the days of my life. Was it possible for David HaMelech to dwell in God's house all the days of his life? Does a person not to eat and sleep and take care of his children and other things? But clearly, on one level, to live in Beit Hashem means she'ikara tefilah v'bakashahi ala Beit HaPrati. It's about our own individual homes. She'iskeh l'taharet beito, that we should purify our own homes. Ad she'yeh Beit Hashem, until it will be the house of Hashem. The house, Shishchina Shruya Beinehem, the house where Hashem's presence shall dwell. My friends, this was the goal of the tabernacle. It wasn't just about taking wood and making kruvim and making the aron and the shulchan and the lechem apanim and all the various different items that were found in the Mishkan. The goal, the ultimate goal, was in order through all of these things to bring the Ashras HaShechina, to bring God's presence down in the lighting of the menorah, in the showbread, in all the items. The ultimate goal was not the menorah for the menorah's sake, but the menorah to bring the Shechina, to bring God's presence. Likewise, when we are speaking about creating a Jewish home, our goal as well has to be a home where Kadosh Baruch Hu is brought into this home. So first and foremost, our homes have to be filled with Kedusha, have to be filled with holiness. The way we speak in our home, the way we act in our home, the way we dress in our home, the way we behave in our home, they have to reflect a place of holiness. As Rav Pinkus often says, imagine that in Arun Kodesh, the Sifrei Torah are found in one's living room. How would you dress? How would you speak? How would you act? That's how we should feel, that Hashem's presence is in our home. And in fact, Rav Pinkus notes, and this is found in a Sefer Ol Miriam in source number 6. He says, one of the greatest challenges of our generation, as parents, as mechanchim, as teachers, is that we're mekayim et kol mitzvos haTorah. We're very scrupulous to keep the details of the Torah. But einenu choshvim daya l'Kadosh Baruch Hu. We don't think enough about Hashem. Kivyachol, it's as if HaKadosh Baruch Hu nishkach mitanu. It's as if, God forbid, God is forgotten from us. As Yirmiyahu HaNavi points out, Tosea Torah lo yida'uni. The knowers of Torah, those who are involved in Torah, lo yida'uni, do not know me. What does this mean? Don't we daven? Don't we do mitzvahs? Obviously. But says Rav Pinkus, we don't relate to Kadosh Baruch Hu as an ishiyut chai, as a living personality, as someone who's watching over us, as somebody who cares about us, as somebody who loves us, as someone whom we can talk to, as someone whom we can relate to. He says we live in an automated society. We wake up and we're programmed, so to speak, okay? Open your sitter, chakras, daven. This is where you stand, this is where you sit, this is where you bow, this is where... And we go through our whole davening that way. But to turn to Kadosh Baruch Hu, and that's one of the sweet stories Rabbi Twersky brings in his Sefer from generation to generation, of an old Rav standing by the Kotel, and one could overhear him saying to Kadosh Baruch Hu, oh, I'm sorry, I think I told you this yesterday. There's such sweetness to this story. You relate to Kadosh Baruch Hu like a friend. Did I tell you this story yesterday? You say to Kadosh Baruch Hu, good morning. How are you? But here's what's going on in my life. Here's where I'm holding. You relate to a Kadosh Baruch Hu on a level of something that's very personal, something that's very alive. And this, my friends, is really what is missing within our education, within our whole structure. We're missing that feeling of a Kadosh Baruch Hu being alive. And he says, in a real sense, in source 8, ki kishmotzi'im et neshama matara matfila mehayudi mikol ma shayudi yadud ba lelamedotanu. When you take out the neshama, the soul, out of the Torah, out of davening, out of the Jew, so what is left? What is left is nishar hadam gufkar. We're cold. Chaser tochen. We're missing substance. The chaser chayut. We're missing life. Umikan va'adli dar derut rachman lutzlan haderech einar rechoka. The path between that and, God forbid, going off the path is not far. My friends, this happens to be a topic that's very, very close to home that I feel very passionate about. We're mechanech our children, we're mechanech our students, and they know a tremendous amount. But what they are missing is to look at a Kadosh Baruch Hu as alive, to feel the Hashgacha Prati stories in our lives, that Hashem is doing this to me personally, that we have a relationship. A very beautiful essay, Moshe Weinberger from Eish Kodesh in Woodmere, speaks about a student who once was studying in a post-high school yeshiva. And he said to the Rebbe, he said to Rosh Yeshiva, he says, I see everyone learning, I see all the Gemaras, But where is Hashem? Where is God here? And the response of the Rebbe was, this is not about tshuva yeshiva. Go back to learn. And this boy is no longer from today. Is it any wonder, my friends? And as Rabbi Weinberger notes in this essay, he says, our girls know the Alshich and the Malbim and the Radaks and all of Tehillim. But do they know how to cry like our grandmothers who perhaps didn't know all these commentators? But they knew how to cry over a Kapitel Tehillim. They knew what it meant. Our children know the analytical, chiastic structure. But they're missing the heart. They're missing the neshama. They're missing a relationship with Hashem. It reminds me of a personal mindset that comes to mind. A number of years ago, when we were living in L.A., the shul that we were davening at started Rosh Hashanah at 9 o'clock, which is late, we know, for Rosh Hashanah. And the kollel down the block started at 7:30. So my husband had a good idea. He said, why don't you go shacharis to the kollel? At least I would make 7:30 to 9, it makes most of shacharis, and then he could go to minyan. And that way we'd switch off watching the kids. So I went to shul, and there was like no women there. 7:30 in the morning is a bit early. And I noticed that on all the chairs are these beautiful machzorim with, you know, the gold letters of the people's names embossed on it, you know, of the people who were going to come in davening. And I stood there and I said, you know, there's something missing. But you know how you have this situation where you feel like there's something missing, but you can't put your finger on it? So it perturbed me, but I couldn't put my finger on it. And I did the same thing the next day. I went and I davened, and I had the same feeling inside, like the machzorim are beautiful, and everyone's, you know, they're sitting there waiting for the people to daven, but something's missing. And I couldn't put my finger on it again. And I came back, and my husband went to shul. I was playing with Rachel outside. And we had an elderly neighbor who lived a couple of houses down who was being wheeled to shul. And the attendant took this woman to the end of the block. And I could see that when they got to the end of the block, they turned around. Obviously, they had forgotten something. What had she forgotten? She'd forgotten her machzor. So the attendant, not Jewish, went in to get the machzor. And you know what the attendant brought out with her? She brought out with her a pack of tissues. And she said to this woman, I know you'll need this. And I said, that's what was missing. The pack of tissues. The machzorim with the beautiful emblazoned names is great. But how do you have a Rosh Hashanah without a pack of tissues? How do you daven without crying? We're missing the feeling. What this attendant, who was a non-Jew, understood. That she understood that this woman she was taking care of davens with tissues. That's what we're missing. The passion. The relationship. It's the imagery embedded in my own mind of my mother's mother, alas shalom, saying unatanek tokef, crying. Will my grandchildren have that image of me? That's the question we need to ask ourselves. And this, my friends, this idea of closeness, this idea of connection, is what Rav Pinkus notes, that really, when we start teaching a Jewish child in source number 16, so yes, we teach them the first idea is Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe. But he says, you know what? Even before that, we teach them that pasuk of Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe, Marasha Kilos Yaakov. When a little child, we pass it to mezuzah, we tell them, kiss the mezuzah. And when a sefer or a sitter falls, we tell the child, pick it up and give it a kiss. You know what the first thing of chinuch that a child understands? Is you give a Kadosh Baruch Hu a kiss. This is the idea of Mamad Har Sinai that he brings down. That Mamad Har Sinai, Pasuk in Shir HaShirim 16, Yishakenu Mishnishikos Piyu. The Hagdara of Matan Torah is that of a closeness. And that's the goal of building a Jewish home in 18. A piryona salo melech shlomo, a big house, a palace matzei levanon amudava sachesef, Rafidatav Zahav Mirkavo Argaman. It's filled with gold and silver and all these beautiful things. But you want to know what's inside? Telcho Ratsuf Avam Ibnot Yushalayim. We can have the most exquisite homes made of ivory and gilded with gold. But we must make sure to have Telcho Ratsuf Ava, to feel the love, to feel the connection. When we're speaking about how do we create Vasuli Mitas v'shachanti b'tocham to be an eternal nitzchias type of mitzvah, the answer is that we need to challenge ourselves, whatever our family unit may look like, to create an environment where we feel a Kadosh Baruch Hu's presence resting in our home, resting in our midst, that davening and brachos and mitzvos are alive. There's a real personality to whom we turn. That we speak about Ashkacha Prati stories. We speak about the Niflal Sabore, the wonders that Hashem has done. It's a reality. It's alive. It's vibrant. And it's full of love. Rabbi Brizak, in his Sefer Chinuch in Turbulent Times, notes that's why it is so crucial that if we want in 14 our children to develop a love for Torah and Judaism, we have to make sure that they feel the joy. And parents need to consistently make statements like, I really enjoy the Shabbat table. I love the peace and quiet of Shabbat. I feel so fortunate to be Jewish. When they feel this, that they're growing up, Ashreinu Matov Chalkeinu, that it's love, it's joy, it's passion in their Avodas Hashem. And it's interesting, Rabbi Brizak notes that raising children is very much like a successful person who raises a plant. And the three considerations are on the top left, you need to have for successful growth to soften the ground, to consider the weather conditions, and protecting the growing plant from strong wind forces. Soften the ground, it has to be a tremendous amount of love, where a child feels secure and loved. Two, it has to be good weather conditions. And he says that before you plant, you have to make sure the weather conditions permit it. The worst time to influence a child is when he's doing something wrong. He's not open to hearing you. So when a child does something wrong, to reprimand them then, this is not what to do. They're not listening. They have all the fences up. When they're doing something right, to make it even better, to show how they can improve. You did an amazing job. This is how you can do it even better. That's when it's fertile time. And to make sure that we don't, what we do, contradict what we say. As in 13, as one author said, what you are is screaming so loudly that I cannot hear what you say. And this idea is brought down in the Talei Oros, next page in source 19, where he notes that there are two times that the Kruvim, these angelic figures, are found. One time is at the entrance of the Garden of Eden when Adam HaRishon is thrown out, and the second time is here on top of the Ark. And that's the challenge. Rashi there describes the Kruvim in Gan Eden as Malachei Chavala, as angels of destruction. And here these are the angels from which God himself speaks through them, or in between them. The challenge of Chinuch is how will our children, these Kruvim, these angelic-like faces, turn out. And it's very much in our hands to see, to direct. And the key ingredient is to feel this love, to feel this connection, to make sure that our students, our children, have this ability to feel Hashem's presence among them. My final idea on this, before moving on, a number of years ago, I read on one of these lists for educators around the world, thousands of educators submit issues and curriculum challenges. And per se, I'm the type of person who stays very low-key and I don't speak my mind. But in this particular case, I was very driven. It was a question, a query from one of the high schools where the Rebbe said, this was the question that a student asked. The student, I don't remember the exact details, but the basic underlying question was, the student said, does it really matter to God whether we put back the food on Shabbos like this or like that? I mean, does it really make a difference to God? And many people gave different answers on a very philosophical level to this question. And without containing myself, I responded to this list and said, in my humble opinion, the basis of such a question is that we're not being mechanech our children to an understanding and relationship of who and what Hashem is. A child who feels a connection to Hashem, a child who feels that Hashem is very much with us in all parts of our day and life, would never ask such a question. It's someone, in my humble opinion, who feels that Hashem is very distant, and it's just, you know, rubrics of do's and don'ts that can ask such a question. And I said, I think it behooves every educator to read the Sefer Bavavi Mishkan Evne, which is now available in English, Build for Me a Sanctuary, and be able to create that message in the classroom where students can go through 12 years, 13 years of learning and not feel an emotional connection to Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's our chaps. That's our challenge. That, my friends, is level number one of our study today. That's the easy part. Not so short, so easy, but that's part one. An awareness, a passion, a joy, God consciousness, say brachos out loud, feel happy, speak about Ashreinu Matov Chokeinu, how lucky we are to be Jewish. When we're excited, then it has a ripple effect. The second idea is a bit more esoteric, but we will eventually bring it down to the concrete. Rabbi Halperin, who's a big Talmud Chacham from England, in an essay in Shari Chaim, notes the following. Source number 21. Parashas Truma speaks about the Mishkan and its utensils, while Tzitzavet describes the priestly garments. The Sefer Chinuch says that there was a mitzvah that everything had to be beautiful. To achieve this, gold, silver, and copper, as well as materials of various colors, were used. The Torah tells us the meaning of beauty. The Mishkan was covered with various coverings, and there was a mitzvah to have an overhang of material in excess of the wooden panels. Rashi comments that the Torah is teaching us derech eretz, that a person should be chas al hayofe, that we should take care of that which is beautiful. And he says, what is the message here? What does it mean to look after beauty? And here in source number 22, he notes the famous idea that Rashi brings down, that Moshe Rabbeinu had told Bezalel that first you should make the kelim, the vessels, and then the Mishkan. And Bezalel retorted, he said, would it not make more sense to build the Mishkan, the home, and then the kelim, and then have vessels to put in the hole, right? Have all these vessels and nowhere to put it makes no sense. Moshe Rabbeinu says, but Selkel, you must be in the shadow of God. That's exactly what God told me. What that Medrash means is very deep with the level of Moshe Rabbeinu's on, the level we're on, not for a discussion today. So Bezalel made everything first, and then he made the Mishkan. There was one exception where Bezalel made the covering before he made the beams. And here, Rabbeinu Bechaya said, why is it that he first did the curtains and then the beams? He says, the curtains are symbolic of the heavens, while the beams symbolize the earth, right? I first would have thought that first I need to have the beams in place, and once I have the beams in place, then I have the curtains, the coverings. Why should I have the coverings just sitting there where there are no beams? So, but Bezalel doesn't do that, even though he normally made the structure and then put the things in. Here, he made the curtains and then the beams. Why? So Rabbeinu Bechaya says that the curtains represent Shamayim, heaven, and the beams represent Aretz, earth. And he followed after HaKadosh Baruch Hu. First, Hashem made the Shamayim, the heavens, and then the earth. So too, B'Tselo first made the curtains, and then he made the beams. Now, obviously, there's a tremendous amount of depth in that as well that we need to understand. I think to appreciate Rabbi Halpern's answer, we need to understand first and foremost a little bit of what beauty is about in Judaism. And beauty is a bit different than the normative aesthetic view that we would attribute to beauty. If we look in Rabbi Tatch, Living Inspired, he speaks about, like all pairs of inner form and outer matter, the pair of neshama and body, the soul and the body, should be in perfect balance. The body should reflect the neshama perfectly, should serve it in perfect loyalty. Never should the body stray after its own desires. It should be a vessel, a tool, which obeys its control dimension totally, selflessly. It should be a vehicle driven from within. Its very existence is justified only as a loyal servant. And that's how God originally created Adam. It was an ethereal, luminescent structure which revealed the spiritual content. Adam's Harishon's body was vibrant and bright and light because the soul and the body worked in tandem together. When the inner reality in 25 is perfectly reflected in the outer, when the spirituality of the neshama animates and energizes the body so that it glows visibly, shame is not possible. Shame is the pain of a human mind betrayed by a body, a core which is angelic deserves to be clothed like an angel. When the clothing looks animal, shame is inevitable. Shame is the result of a breakdown between inner and outer dimensions. Truth and beauty demand that the inside is represented accurately on the outside. That, my friends, is, I think, a wonderful definition of beauty, where the inner and outer are in perfect balance with each other, when the body and the soul work hand in hand with each other, when the body recognizes that what is crucial is the inside, and it will be a loyal servant to the spiritual. In 27, he quotes a very famous Gemara of Rabbi Yeshua ben Hanania, who was once engaged in a conversation by a Roman princess. And the Roman princess said, "Can you explain to me how is it possible that someone who is so brilliant as you, right, one of the great sages of the generation, how is it possible that you are so ugly? I mean, like, really ugly. How is it possible that such a brilliant person could be in such an ugly vessel?" So he asked her, "What does your father keep his wine in?" So she said, "In earthenware." He said, "Wine, which is so precious, you should keep in earthenware? It doesn't, you know, deserve to be kept in earthenware. Why not keep it in gold and silver vats? That's deserving for wine." So she orders that to be done, and the end result is all the wine turns into vinegar and goes sour. And when her father asks what happened, she said, "It's not my fault. Rabbi Yeshua ben Hanania told me to do this." So when Rabbi Yeshua ben Hanania was asked, he said to her, I simply answered her, 28, bottom of this page, according to her question. I wish to show her that when the vessel becomes important, it spoils the content. What profound words. When the vessel becomes important, it spoils the content. This, my friends, is a great challenge that we need to have, that we need to be able to keep a perspective on outer beauty, that it should never lose the focus on the inner content. That is not to say that a person should be beautiful and work on their outer beauty, but it has to be simultaneous with the inner beauty. We speak about Yifat Toar and Yifat Maret. Yifat Toar is someone who has or, whose soul is coming out with light, with the or of the neshama. And then Yifat Maret, a person of beautiful form. Yosef HaTzadik, the end of 29, is the only man in Chumash who's described in beautiful terms usually used for a woman. He is the one who overcame his temptations, and his outer and inner were perfectly in sync, in harmony, one with each other. That is our challenge. Our challenge, my friends, and it's a very, very, very big challenge, is that we often get swayed by the outer. We often get very affected by the outer. And we get so affected by the outer that we rarely give enough attention to the inner. And then everything becomes skewed. The real beauty is when the outer and inner become in tandem. And when we can recognize that we shouldn't get caught up in the outer trappings, but be able, whether they're nice or not, but be able to see the inner and the core of what and who a person is. That is our path, 32, to generate harmony between the inner and outer worlds. Not to reject the physical, that's much easier, but to bring it under control, the spiritual, to train the body into absolute loyalty to the Shema. That harmony of opposite is beauty. That harmony of opposites is beauty. It is a cure for shame, and that must be our path until the end of history. Before going back to the beams and the curtains and Rav Halpern's essay, I'd like to share a story which I think is a very poignant story, which reflects our challenge that we have in this world, where we don't know really how to appreciate real beauty. Stories about a man, a young fellow named Larry, who was a bit of an unkempt fellow, and I'm not advocating here being unkempt. That's not where I'm saying. He had a ponytail, didn't take care of himself too well, and he's one of those, what we call those nebachs, who couldn't hold down a job. We're talking about dishwashers. We're talking about chauffeurs. We're talking about doormen. We're not talking about, you know, high-class jobs. We're talking about couldn't hold down any job. So it reached a point where he was desperate. He's looking in the, you know, column for jobs, and he needed to pay his rent. Now, we're not talking that he lived in a, you know, a gorgeous mansion here, but he had a roof over his head. He needed to pay rent. He needed to have food, and he had nothing. So he looks in the classified section, and he sees yeshiva looking for janitor, good pay. Good pay. Well, that really spoke to him. So he called up the yeshiva, Shar Yashuv in Far Rockaway, and he makes the trip from Brooklyn to Far Rockaway to apply for this job to be a janitor. And who should he meet with? He thought he would meet with someone on the custodial staff. He meets with the Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Freifeld Zatzal. And Rav Freifeld sits down with him and starts talking to him. And he says to him, do you know what a yeshiva is? You know, you're applying for a job in a yeshiva. You know what a yeshiva is? So Larry says, yeah, I know what a yeshiva is. I used to learn. I went to yeshiva for many years, and then, you know, I just became disenchanted, and I was a disappointment to my parents, and I just had enough of it, and I left it, and I left that whole path, and I haven't been there in years. And he began to pour out his heart to this rabbi. And then as he's sitting there, he's saying, like, you know, don't talk so much. You just want a job as a janitor. Just focus on that. So when he finished speaking, Rav Freifeld said, okay, I'm ready to hire you as a Rebbe. You can start on Wednesday. He says, excuse me, I applied for a job as a janitor, not as a Rebbe. So he said, look, I don't have a job as a janitor. I have a job of a Rebbe. I have a couple of guys with hair longer than your hair who need a teacher. You obviously could do a better job than me, so you're hired to be the Rebbe. He says, excuse me, Rabbi, I don't keep kosher. I don't keep Shabbos. I don't wear a yarmulke. I don't wear tzitzis. I can't be a Rebbe. He said, look, if you don't want to take the job, you don't have to take the job. But otherwise, Wednesday is when you can start. So here he's hungry, he's cold, he needs a roof over his head. He says, okay, I'll start Wednesday. So Rav Freifeld said, okay, this is what they're learning. Do you remember learning this? He says, vaguely. So Rav Freifeld said, well, if you need any help, just let me know and I'll help you. So sure enough, Wednesday comes, he gets an advance paycheck and comes with moccasins and a blazer, and he begins teaching without a yarmulke and without tzitzis. So after a couple of times, he says to Rav Freifeld, you know, I feel a little bit uncomfortable. teaching Gemara and I don't have a yarmulke in my head and I'm not wearing tzitzis. Rabbi Feinfeld said, look, I'm willing to lend you the tzitzis and the yarmulke. There's no obligation for you to wear it, you know, any more than when you're teaching. If you want it, that's great. And, you know, whatever makes you happy. Well, to make a long story short, my friends, now 35 years later or so, Larry is now Levi. He is a Rebbe in a yeshiva in Yerushalayim, married with 9 children, leading a home of Torah and Mitzvos. This is somebody who is able to see beyond the external appearance. And as Rabbi Spiro notes, in describing the story, he said, Larry was the type of guy that when you sat down near him when he sat down near you on the subway, you shifted over a couple of seats. You know those type of people? Rav Feinfeld was able to see beyond the external into the beauty and was able to bring the outer and inner beauty in tandem. That's what life is about. We so often judge so many things on outer beauty and we refuse to see what real beauty is about. If we have the eyes of Rav Feinfeld, Zatzal, then we're able to see beauty and be able to create an outer and inner beauty in tandem, one with each other. With this in mind, we can now go back to the beams and the curtains. In Source 33, the beams were made of acacia wood that Yaakov took with him to Egypt and planted there. They were from Beersheba and planted by Abraham. They were kept for hundreds of years and were then used in the Mishkan. The Torah uses the word shittim, acacia, 24 times, corresponding to 24,000 people killed during the plague of Baal Peor in shittim, and that was the sin of following after the beautiful women of Midian. The word shittim comes from the word shoteh, which our rabbis say is a ruach shtut, a spirit of foolishness that enters into a person when they sin. Yaakov Avinu took these trees down because he recognized that these trees represent the physicality of this world, represent the earth of this world. And he recognized that people in this world are challenged by going after temptations, by going after our heart's desires. And therefore, the curtains had to be in place first, that we have to understand that when it comes to physical beauty, we need to have the spiritual heavens, the curtains covering them, that we need to have the correct perspective. Because if we don't have the correct perspective on the wood and we leave it uncovered, then what may happen is we're going to have this beauty that is going to be misused. The 35, the asterisks, now we can understand why the covers were made before the beams. This refers to the fact that whilst there is beauty, it has to be protected and covered, or else it is misused. The beams represent the challenge of the beauty, of the sheeting, when it's not used in the correct way. And the challenge that we have is to know how to see things from a spiritual vantage point. Yerushalayim is the place of Klilat Yalfi, of tremendous beauty. The end of 34. What was the beauty in Yerushalayim? That everyone had a place to stay. That there was a feeling of people being able to get along with each other. There's a spiritual beauty that is found in this world. And that is why Rav Pinkus notes in source number 38, I think a fantastic insight, where he says that the nation that perhaps quintessentially represents beauty for beauty's sake alone, the outer devoid of the inner, is Yavan, is Greece. Yafta Elokim Leyefet, the beauty of Greece. The feminine of Yavan would be a Yona. And says Rav Pinkus in 38, he says, Yavan being the masculine is always that which gives. That their beauty was to create beauty for its own sake. The Yonah, the feminine, the dove, is that which receives, that which reflects. The beauty of Klal Yisrael is the reflection of godliness. Our beauty is spiritual beauty. We relate to beauty on spiritual terms. And that's the difference between us. Uketotza'a mikach, the end of 38, the asterisk. Sheyavan miyachasim et hayofi latzman. Yavon looks at beauty for its own sake. Hemigyafim l'tzarech atzmam l'chvodam dovad. And they beautify things for themselves. Ve'ilu Yisrael shemiyachasim et yofyam la'ashem. Mityatfim l'chvod Hashem. When we beautify something, we beautify things for a spiritual purpose. We take our beautiful clothes and our beautiful china and our beautiful food and we use them for a Shabbos, for a Yantif, for a spiritual experience. We understand that beauty for beauty's sake alone is Yavan. Real beauty is to have the physical and the spiritual working hand in hand within a person, within objects, within time, within all facets of life. It's that perfect harmony of the curtains and the beams, the shamayim and aretz. The whole Mishkan is that synthesis that God resides in a place of beauty where the physical and the spiritual are completely in sync, in harmony. Where does that leave us, my friends? I think it leaves us with two very, very important upshots, which I want to spend, Mirza Hashem, the last 15 minutes or so developing, very briefly. We need to create our own beautiful home within ourselves, v'shachanti b'tocham, with each and every individual. How do we do this? So I think on the first level, as the Torah tells us, v'ichu li truma, Rab Nevin Zal in 45, quoting Rashi, li lishmi. When you are going to take the items for the tabernacle, it has to be for the sake of God. And in fact, he notes that every aspect of building the Beit HaMikdash had to be done with having this in mind, that this is being done for the Beit HaMikdash. And if that kavana wasn't there, then that item could not be used. So on one level, the way we create inner beauty is to recognize that our entire lives have to be li lishmi. That everything we do, everything we're involved in, has to be that mindset that I am building a place for God to reside. That whatever I am doing, I am giving my mindset, I'm giving my desire, my heart, to connect my physical actions with a spiritual reality. And that, in fact, is one of the greatest challenges that we have in our lives. To be able to have the physical and the spiritual work hand in hand together, wherein we have to have the idea that's found on the top left stores of that everything was done, the chol ma'asecha yu l'shem shamayim, that everything that we have should be for the sake of heaven. And he quotes their ethics from Sinai, the idea that's found from Rav Chaim of Volozhin. Rav Chaim of Volozhin points out that there's a pasuk in Yeshaya, as the rain comes down and waters the ground, and then it returns back up to God. Likewise, everything that we do in this world, the Geshem, the Gashmios, when God gives us blessings, our challenge to have the water cycle, so to speak, is to take those blessings and say a bracha on them, to recognize they come from God, to be able to elevate all that we have back up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that, my friends, is one of the greatest challenges that we have. That when we eat, when we sleep, when we're involved in any experience, we say, I'm eating in order to have energy to serve God. I'm going to sleep now so I can wake up refreshed tomorrow to be able to be an Eved Hashem. That is taking our lives, li, lishmi, and being able to dedicate ourselves to Hashem. Now, obviously, it's a high level, but at least it's an approach. And this is also about bringing God down to my life. It's very real. I recognize that I'm here as a servant of God. And we also know that Kadosh Baruch Hu can take us away at a moment's notice. And therefore, the time that we're here in this world, we need to be able to utilize for the service of God. I create a sanctuary by elevating all my physical aspects to the service of God. But you know, my friends, I think that's a classic way of creating our sanctuary, the beauty of the inner and outer, the physical and the spiritual in tandem. But I'd like to suggest another way to focus a little bit more practically on what we can do. We know, and this is a top source, that the ark was made with gold on the inside, then wood, and then gold on the outside. And our rabbis point out, Art Scroll Stone Chumash, quoting Chazal, in the second paragraph, that Tamidei Chachamim have to use this model of what we call Tocho Kibaro, that one's inner and outer have to be in tandem together. That a Tamid Chacham should be, that his heart and his words are shavim, are the same, that we practice what we preach. And here, in the Sefer Ish L'Reyehu, he brings down an entire chapter on the chashivos, on the importance of not only Tamidei Chachamim, but each and every individual should live a life of honesty. That there should be no Gneva Stat, there should be no, stealing a person's mind. And I'll just share a number of examples, one can read it at one's leisure. Examples that Rabbeinu Yonah brings down, as well as the Pella Yoetz, as well as others, on examples of Gneva Stat. Let's say you open a fine bottle of wine, and then your friend comes who you weren't expecting to visit, and they see this fine bottle of wine, they say, wow, that's so nice of you to open a fine bottle of wine in my honor. You should not respond, anytime, you're such a special friend, because then you're giving them the impression that the special bottle of wine was opened for them when you had opened it previously. The correct response is, the truth is, I opened this wine even before you came, but I'm so happy that you showed up because you're the perfect person I'd like to share the special bottle of wine with. Another example that a person gave today when I gave the Shira Madishko is that they were walking to a far place for lunch, and on the way they went to somebody's kiddush to wish them a mazel tov. And she said her husband went over to the Baal Simcha and said, I don't want you to think that I schlepped all this way, it was a long distance from their house, just for you. The truth is, I'm here to say mazel tov, but I'm on my way to lunch and following place, and this was on my way. Lest the person think, wow, this is what we call social graces. The person could easily say, wow, I really must like me, he schlepped all this way for me. Let there be no mistake. Yes, I like you. Yes, I stopped by. But it wasn't you who made me schlep. It was for this lunch invitation. This is something that we need to be so careful about. We live in a world which is so fake. We live in a world where we're so into impressing other people. What we're talking here about is being honest. And he notes here toward the bottom, he says, that a person's religious level should reflect where they're at. Don't try to be more pious than you are. Don't try to make an appearance on all those around you that you're really very religious, when inside you're not holding by any of these things. A person needs to be honest with themselves and honest with those around them. If something is not true, you say it's not true. You don't have Gneva Stas. You're not deceiving people. You're honest in your dealings with others. My friends, this is really the Avoda of Chodesh Elul. On the seventh sheet, which I'm not sure all of you got in time, so you have it, but you may not have it in front of you, Alekach Valibov notes a Gevaldic piece. We bench Rosh Chodesh Adar, Wednesday and Thursday, Mirtz Hashem. Our Adar, by the way, the Mepharshim speak about, is from the word Adur, to dwell, that Adar is about God dwelling within us, about building the Beis HaMikdash. Be that as it may, the month of Adar is really about working on this Midah of Emes, of truth. He notes that the Pasuk of Zachor Tasher Salacha Amalek, remember what Amalek did, Haman, who's a descendant of Amalek, comes at the end of Parsha Ki Teitzeh, right after the story, or the law, when a person does not have just weights. And the juxtaposition between the two is that when you do not have honesty, when you have falsehood in your midst, Amalek comes. Amalek represents the inyan of sheker, of falsehood. And that's why he continues in Source B, the Lekach Valibu. When our rabbis speak about that Haman made a lottery, and the lottery fell out in the month of Adar, Haman was very happy, because Adar is the month that Moshe Rabbeinu died. And Moshe Rabbeinu represents Moshe Emes, Vitarasa Emes. He's truth. His Torah is truth. So the month that he died, he figures this is the month where truth is at its lowest, that falsehood can rear its head. It's interesting that the mazel for the month of Adar is dagim, is fish. And although this is not what we say in Perek Shira, the Gemara Sachim says, Rabbi Natan says, that dagim shebayam say, ve'emes Hashem la'ola. And it's specifically dagim shebayam, because he says, we live and see in an alma de shikra, in a world of falsehood, when the whole avir ha'olam, the whole air of this world is sheker, it just permeates everything that we are in, that we live. People aren't honest, people, you know, the whole world of advertising. It's a dagim shebayam, it's a fish in the sea, who are in water, mikvah, tahara, who are able to see the truth. And it's interesting, while all the other months, anytime it's an animal, it's in the singular, tlesh, shore, by dagim it's in the plural. Because dagim is really the contraction of dag yam. The fish is the fish of the sea. It's the fish of the element of truth. The month of Adar is about the element of truth. And that, my friends, is really the difference between Yaakov and Esau. Yaakov is described as an Ish Tam, the end of D. And Rashi tells us, Shelibo Kain Piv. What does Tam mean? His heart and his mouth are in sync. That is the opposite of Esau. We know Esau is compared to the pig, where the pig stretches out its hoof and says, look, I have, you know, split hooves. But meanwhile, it's not a kosher animal, it doesn't chew its cud. That's the external that does not reflect the internal. Avodas Yemei Purim and Adar is that a person should live with a midah of emes, truth in the sense of peh v'alev yiyu mechubarim, that our hearts and our mouths should be connected, that we shouldn't do something externally that's not a reflection of where we are holding internally. Esther is about the seter, the inside, Aleph seter. The inside is that Aleph, is at one with the outside. And he quotes here a gewaldic insight in E, in the in this page, and I'll show it dramatically here as well. The concept of Toho Kiboro, that one's inside and one's outside should be a reflection of one with each other. So he notes here that Toho, inside, the middle letters of Toho in the blue are Vav and Chaf, which is the numerical value of 26, which is Shem Havaya, the name of God. Kivaro, one's outside, the outer letters are also Kaf, Vav in blue, which are also 26. The inner godliness and the outer godliness should be one and the same. That's the idea of Toho Kivaro. The idea Machia Samalek, Lo Tishkach Balev, don't forget in your heart, the Zachor Bepeh, and remember with your mouth. That is the goal of Adar. And that, my friends, is really the essence of that we spoke about at the beginning, of bringing Hashem into your midst. That Hashras Hashchina, the goal of the sanctuary, is godliness. We know Chatamo Shel Kadosh Baruch Hu is Emes, the seal of God, the signet of God is truth. You want to bring God into your midst, you need to be an element of truth, of being able to be truthful within yourself, within your dealings with others. How do you do this? Our final idea for today. On the previous page, the Slobodka Rosh Yeshiva and Leket Sichos Moser, the bottom left, talks about that it really wasn't gold and gold, Toho Kibaro, there was a wooden box also there. And he knows that the wooden box is a representation of Eit HaTzomeach, of something that's alive and growing. How do we make ourselves Toho Kibaro? How do I make myself a sanctuary for God to dwell within me? I need to be a person who's growth-oriented. I need to be a person who's going to constantly want to become better, who's going to constantly work on myself, who constantly is checking, am I as honest as I should be? And that's why Rabbi Lev points out, perhaps on a deeper level, the model of Adar being Dogim Shebayam. We know the famous allegory of the fish of the sea represent the Jews who learned Torah. And says Rabbi Lev from the bottom left, there is a wonderful imagery about the fish. That fish, although they're in the water, when it rains, they have a peculiar custom of going up to the top of the water and trying to drink the droplets. They have plenty of water. Why are they going up to the top when it rains? Because they have a desire for even more. That is Adar. That's the Dogim Shebayam. That's the fish in the sea. That's the model of real truth. You want to be a person of truth, then you have to have your outer and inner goal. It has to be one and the same, but the middle has to be a box. It has to be alive. It has to be growing. It has to be a person who says, I'm working on myself. I have to become a better person. I have to become a greater person. I'm not going to be stagnant. I'm not going to stand still. I'm going to always check myself and see how I can integrate and grow. And that's our challenge for the month of Adar, to try to be as honest as we can, to make ourselves a sanctuary of beauty, that the inner and outer are in tandem. What we say and what we do, what we think and what we say, reflect each other as completely as possible. We don't mislead people. We don't compliment people if we don't really aren't sincere about it. We're as honest as we can. And therefore, my friends, in summation, Fasuli Mikdash Shachanti B'Tocham, on the first level, is every individual, whatever your home structure may look like, needs to bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu into our home to make it a place of emotionally the tissues, feeling that connection to Hashem, making it a place alive, dynamic, mitzvos, brachos, the personality, davening. I told you this yesterday with relationship with Hashem. The soil has to be one of love, one of encouraging, one of positivity, one of Ashreinu Matov Chokeinu. And the second thing, my friends, is we need to understand what beauty is. Beauty is living in harmony, the outer and inner together. Beauty is being able not to get caught up just on the outer, but to recognize what are the inside, the contents of the vessel, and to be able to appreciate and to be able to focus in on those contents, because ultimately all physical things fade and disintegrate over time. It's only the spiritual that gets better and better over time. How do we work on our beauty of the beams and the curtains hand in hand? The Shemayim and Aretz, the heaven and earth, on the one hand, the Chol Ma'asecha Yulashem Shemayim, everything should be for the sake of heaven. Before I eat, before I do anything, I feel I have a connection of elevating toward God. And the second level, my friends, is the ability to live a life of the Aron, of Tocho Kibaro, to be honest, to be a person who has the Kavvav, the Shem Havaya, as part and parcel, the Tam of Yaakov Avinu as part of who we are, of making us ourselves the Dogim Shebayam. But never to forget that there's wood in between of growth, of a desire like those fish to always have more water and more water, that I've never learned enough, that I'm always on Mav Eshrim trying to grow greater and greater and being able to bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu into our lives. And my bracha to all of us is that we should be successful in each and every one of us on all of these levels to build a Mikdash Ma'at, that we should be Zocha V'Shachanti V'Tocham, that Hashem dwells in our midst.